Well, it wasn't long before scientific difficulties with Darwin's theory began to crop up. This happened right away in the 1860s. And I do mean scientific difficulties, issues raised not by the likes of Bishop Wilberforce, but by natural scientists themselves. Among the first was the claim that there hadn't been sufficient time for evolution by natural selection to occur. And it was raised from a quarter you might not expect, by a physicist. This was William Thomson, later Lord Kelvin. You may have heard of his absolute temperature scale. He was one of those who defined the new science of thermodynamics just prior to the appearance of the origin. Anyway, Thomson had become convinced that the cosmos was running down. What did he mean by running down? Well, we're going to take this up in earnest in lectures 29 and 30. For now, let me just say that Thomson inferred the running down of the cosmos from his work on energy exchanges. He determined that exchanging energy involved processes that were irreversible. One way of expressing this irreversibility was that gradually energy was becoming less available to sustain the order in the cosmos, so it was gradually running down. That meant, of course, that as time passed, the cosmos, and the Earth within it, was slowly becoming a different place. Now, you may recall that this was the opposite conclusion from the one that Charles Lyell believed. We met his steady-state Earth back in Lecture 18. Lyell believed that the Earth had always been the same, essentially. Yes, it underwent cyclic changes. One region that was now dry land may have been underwater at an earlier time. But other than these minor changes, the landscape remained similar. The minor changes had no accumulative effect. If you were transported back in time, you'd recognize the landscape regardless of how long ago it was. So the Earth was in a steady state. Although it had been here for an enormous time, according to Lyell, it hadn't developed from some qualitatively different primitive condition to the one we see today. So Lyell and Thomson held opposite beliefs on the history of the Earth, and they were pretty much mutually exclusive. There really was no compromise possible. If Lyell were right, then the Earth could have been supporting life on its surface for who knows how long. Certainly more than enough time for the evolution Darwin claimed to have happened. And that was indeed a lot of time. If evolution happened as Darwin said it did, not according to some pre-existing plan, then it must have taken eons for the complexity we see to have come about. A little like, though admittedly not exactly like, the amount of time it would take monkeys to type Shakespeare. Thomson didn't think the Earth had been cool enough to support life for anywhere near that long. In fact, as early as 1861, Thomson announced to the British Association meeting that even the sun's age was likely no more than 100 million years old. And then a year later, Thomson declared that Lyell's steady-state theory of the Earth amounted to a perpetual motion machine. That, as many conceded, was against the first principles of natural philosophy. Well, Darwin's insistence on gradual evolutionary change required far more than even 100 million years. Physics and evolutionary biology were at odds. Some of Darwin's defenders tried to accommodate the physicists by suggesting that evolution might have occurred more rapidly than Darwin thought. But Darwin himself refused that suggestion. So Thomson's denial that there'd been sufficient time for gradual evolution to have happened remained a thorn in his side. It was only after the turn of the century, with the discovery of radioactivity, that physicists revised their estimates of the ages of the sun and Earth so that they were compatible with the kind of timescale that Darwinian evolution required. But it was an unresolved issue in the 19th century, certainly not something that helped Darwin's cause among scientists. That was one of the scientific difficulties, but there were more. A review of Darwin's book in 1867 by a Scottish engineer named Fleming Jenkin raised a pressing problem about why natural selection simply wouldn't work. Jenkin pointed out that the advantageous variations Darwin counted on so heavily wouldn't have the effect Darwin thought. They would, he said, be swamped out by normal traits. Let me explain. Here's how Jenkin thought of it. He appealed, in fact, to Victorian racial assumptions, racist assumptions, really, to illustrate his claim. Imagine, he said, that a white-skinned sailor is shipwrecked on an island inhabited only by blacks, Africa. Now remember, Jenkin equated the sailor's whiteness with superior traits of intelligence, ingenuity, courage, self-control, endurance.